Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. Exactly 15 years ago on Halloween Day in 2008, an unknown man named Satoshi Nakamoto published a white paper that has affected countless people's lives. That's the same year as the Great Recession that followed the Wall Street crash and bailout. The paper was an elegant mathematical treatise outlining Bitcoin, a new parallel person-to-person cryptocurrency that functions without any bank, credit corporation, or national government at its helm. Satoshi Nakamoto released his design of a blockchain database for anyone to use. But a few years later, in 2011, he disappeared, leaving Bitcoins now worth as much as $70 billion. Who was he? Where did he go? Why did he disappear? And is Satoshi still alive? Searching for Satoshi, the mysterious disappearance of the Bitcoin creator, is a new documentary that looks at the elusive Satoshi Nakamoto and who he, or she, really was, or is. The film tracks down some of the people rumored to be him and tries to see whether he's still alive. It's the work of multi-award-winning Toronto documentarian Paul Kemp. I've spoken about Paul's work many times on this show. I interviewed Drew Hayden Taylor about the series Going Native and the doc Pretendians that Paul Kemp directed and produced, and talked about Transformer with Michael Del Monte and trans bodybuilder Janae Marie Krokzaleski, which Kemp produced. Searching for Satoshi premiered this week on The Passionate Eye and is currently streaming on CBC Gem. And now, for the first time, I'm very pleased to have Paul Kemp himself here with me via Zoom to tell us more about Searching for Satoshi. Hi, Paul.
Hi, nice to meet you, finally. And that was a really in-depth intro. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for meeting with me. So there have been lots and lots of articles and documentaries and even dramas about cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. Why did you decide to make a doc about it now?
Well, it's a good question, because I think the myth of Satoshi Nakamoto has only grown since he vanished in 2011. Most people I know actually have heard of Bitcoin. It's probably got like a penetration of like 99% of people have heard of it. But of those 99%, I think only about 1% actually knows what Bitcoin is and the real story behind Satoshi, which I just found fascinating. So as I started to get into this area of Bitcoin, which I thought was like monopoly money or some weird crypto Ponzi scheme, for a long time I just ignored it. But then it kept sticking around. And then every person I knew who actually was deep in the finances of this was so devoutly in favor of Bitcoin that I was like, well, maybe I should pay attention to this. And so that's how I got into it. I took a university course on it in 2019. I took some online courses during COVID. And the story of Satoshi being this guy who just launches this thing and then vanishes just captured my imagination. And I know you've said that there's a lot of documentaries and stories about this online, but I have never been satisfied with the origin story. And that's why I wanted, if I could do anything in this space, I wanted to explore why this came about, why this new digital currency that is permissionless, it can travel across borders, anyone in the world can take part. Why did that start? And why did the guy leave? And I think it is a guy, by the way. If we're going to go by self-definition, he referred to himself as a he hundreds of times. So I do think it is a he, and I want to respect his gender identity in that regard.
Gary Gensler, chairperson of the SEC, that's the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, tweeted a joke just a couple days ago. He said, if Satoshi Nakamoto went as Satoshi Nakamoto for Halloween, would we be able to tell? So why don't we know what this guy looks like or looked like?
Because he went to the ends of the earth, it seems, in planning to release this to be anonymous. He did not want the world to know or identify with a central character. Most of the cryptocurrencies, which I do believe are Ponzi schemes that are going around, like the Sam Bankman-Fried stories, these are stories that are about a crypto that is a you can mint a crypto very easily on a computer. I don't know if any of your listeners would know this, but I learned how to make my own crypto in 2020, and I made, I think, a billion of them. It was like a stroke of a computer key. And a lot of the cryptocurrencies are like that. Bitcoin is not like that. It's exactly the opposite. It's only going to be 21 million Bitcoin, which isn't very many. That's very few Bitcoin ever in the world. And I think what Satoshi was trying to do was say, we cannot have this runaway currencies where we don't know what things are worth. And he was looking around in 2008 and he said, I need to create this now. And he released it at that point, right at the end of 2008. This is the financial crisis. If any of your listeners are old enough to remember, I do. I certainly remember it. People were losing their houses all across America. And it was because of runaway banking, two free loans, a bunch of things were going on. So he wanted to create something that was open to everybody. But if he had centralized it and not become anonymous, people would look to him as the guy who is in charge. And I don't think he ever wanted to be in charge. And it's pretty clear from his writings that he didn't. And so that's why he was anonymous to start with. And he covered his tracks like crazy. He paid cash to create the Bitcoin domain name. He paid cash. Like, it's clear that there was all sorts of things he was doing to hide himself. He picks a Japanese pseudonym. For years, a lot of people thought it was a young Japanese man who was Satoshi Nakamoto until he vanishes. And then everyone's going, well, wait a sec. Who is this Japanese man? And why is he, where did he go?
Well,
And I don't.
let's talk about that, because your documentary tracks down some of the most likely names of who Satoshi is or was. So what about Dorian Nakamoto? Who is this guy?
Well, that's one of the great stories, and I hope people watch the film on CBC because it's really fun. 2014, people are on the search for Satoshi, and Newsweek thinks they've busted this story, and they go to this guy's house in California, and they say, this guy's name's Dorian Nakamoto, but his birth name is Satoshi Nakamoto. And so they burst in with cameras, and there's a huge media frenzy, and they're like, what do you know about this? And he's kind of this meek Japanese man. He's, in his 50s, and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And no one believes him for about a week. They think he is, because he sort of looks like what you would think an engineering, a Japanese engineer would look like, I guess. Anyway, the story's debunked about a week later, and it turns out that this guy's never had any past with it. But the story, he becomes almost a meme in himself. And I think in the film, people will really enjoy that part. But what's interesting is that he lives fairly close to another character who did that person take his name? Was he another engineer who might have worked in the same area of his? Like, that's sort of what I start to unravel in the
Well,
film.
do
And
tell, do tell.
yeah. Well, one of the characters is Hal Finney. He goes to Caltech. He worked at Caltech, and Dorian Nakamoto was at Cal Poly. They were just down the street from each other. They might have run into each other. The name's kind of cool, Satoshi Nakamoto. So maybe he thinks, oh, maybe I'll pick the pseudonym. Maybe Hal did it. A lot of people don't think it's Hal, though. There's a lot of evidence that suggests Hal Finney might not be Satoshi. What I tried to do in the film was weigh the preponderance of evidence from the different characters and just to make it a sort of a fun romp so that one, you understand what Bitcoin is, and two, you're getting pretty intrigued with this guy, and why he would vanish.
What's interesting is you have a few very famous people who you don't talk about as a potential Satoshi, but online there are rumors that they are. I'm talking about Well, let's start with Gavin Andreessen. Could he be Satoshi, do you think? I mean, you talk about him, you talk to him, but you don't talk about him being Satoshi, right?
Well, yeah, you've watched the 44-minute version for CBC, which is, I think, a very entertaining one. I actually have done a feature-length version, 76 minutes, that's going to release internationally,
Oh.
and I deal with Gavin more in-depthly in that. And the question is, as soon as Satoshi says, "Gavin, you can do this," he actually releases. He basically hands over the project to Gavin to take it on, like the new updates to the Bitcoin protocols and things. And Gavin immediately, within weeks, goes to the CIA to talk about Bitcoin. If you read all of Satoshi's writings, he does not want the CIA to know that he's involved with this thing. Like, it's very clear. So it seems pretty unlikely that the guy, Gavin Andreessen, who seems like a very nice man, a good computer guy, huge believer in Bitcoin. But why would he go to the CIA? He seems excited to talk to the CIA. Well, it seems like Satoshi, who's trying to stay anonymous, doesn't want the CIA mucking in his affairs. And so I think that's why I do not think Gavin Andreessen is Satoshi. No, he's
Another
not.
person rumored online is Elon Musk. Any
Correct.
chance of him being? I mean, he launched his own dog coin or Doge coin.
Dogecoin,
Yeah.
yeah. He is not Satoshi. He's denied it. It doesn't make sense. He would have been so busy making Tesla. If you actually look at the timeline of when Tesla and SpaceX were launching, he's in the muck for. People were saying he was working 100 hours a week during 2007 to 2009. How could he have been working on Bitcoin and launching it? Makes no sense. But it's kind of fun because he's rich and he probably had the technical skills to do so and the interest, and he believed in he was began PayPal, so he believes deeply in transacting currencies over digital methods, right? So, I mean, he's a fun guy to look at, but he's not Satoshi.
Almost everyone you talk to goes around saying, "No, we're not Satoshi. I'm not Satoshi." Then there's this Aussie guy who's saying, "I am Satoshi." Does that make Craig Wright sus or believable?
Well, here's the thing. I got to be honest to all your listeners right now. I had to pull that clip out of the film as of last night,
Oh, I saw it
because
yesterday.
Craig Wright has sued so many people for claiming that he is not Satoshi, that the insurance policy behind the film would not back this, and CBC and us agreed that the risk could be fairly high on a lawsuit if I use that part in the film. Even though he signed a release form, it's kind of a neat angle to this. I liked Craig when I met him. He has claimed to be Satoshi since 2016. He still does. A lot of people don't agree with that. They think he's a charlatan who's trying to create his own cryptocurrency.
I'm of that school.
Yeah, a lot of people are. I'm not even going to comment on it. I let the film do that. You've seen one of the only cuts of the
Oh.
film that actually will actually have that in the final cut. And we just had to make a legal claim because no insurance underwriter wanted to take the risk on a Craig Wright lawsuit. He has sued hundreds of people over claiming that he is not Satoshi. So the risk is being mitigated. It's unfortunate because it was kind of a fun little piece of
Yeah,
the
it
film, I
was.
thought. Yeah. So.
Finally, with the crypto crash earlier this year and FTX crypto exchange founder Sam Bankman-Fried on trial right now, is Bitcoin over?
Bitcoin is the opposite of over. It will grow because of Sam Bankman-Fried. I mean, it took a big hit when everyone lumps FTX and the tokens that are part of all these different cryptos with Bitcoin. I separated it as there's Bitcoin and then there's crypto. And Bitcoin is actually, since the Sam Bankman-Fried trial has been going on, has actually rallied, and people are There's huge hedge funds, there's mutual funds all making bids to have a Bitcoin exchange traded fund on all the markets now. So people want, the interest in Bitcoin is growing, the use cases are growing, and it's becoming a real currency across the world. It's going slower than I think some of the advocates wanted. Like I think around 2015, I think a lot of people thought this thing's going to take over really fast. I think everyone's sitting back and going, well, no, it's growing. It's growing every
but mainly as an as an investment tool, not as a purchasing agent, right?
Correct. I think that's, people are buying it because they see it as a store of value. They see it as a digital gold right now. And so the value is today, it's at somewhere in the $35,000 range, US. It's been as high as 60, but it went down to 15, you know. And you got to remember, like, this is a coin that started in 2009, 2010. It was worth less than a cent. And now it's worth $35,000 USD to buy one Bitcoin. That's crazy. And I mean, it's been the best investment for anyone since that time. Of all time. Will it keep growing at the same? I doubt it's going to. I don't think it can grow from 1 cent to 35,000 in relative terms. But that's, you know, I think it's going to grow, and I think people are going to start using it as a currency, and I think the technology is going to get us there within 5 to 10 years.
Fascinating story. Thanks so much for talking with me, Paul.
No problem. It's been great to talk to you too.
Paul Kemp's new crypto doc, Searching for Satoshi, is now streaming on CBC Gem. This is Daniel Garb of the Movies each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and my website, culturalmining.com.